Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is Thursday morning, the 21st of June. The sun is rising all over our country, and all over our country, that tomb is empty. And that is good news indeed. Because that tomb is empty, there is always hope and always future in the difficulty of present circumstances. So I'm your host for Faith Radio Mornings, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined in studio with Logan Rausch on the board. And Logan, this is a fascinating job. You sit here in the mornings, and you never know what might just wander in. And sure enough, we're hanging out here, and who happens to wander in? One of the heroes of my background, Christian music, old Prayer for Rain guy, Joel Hanson, just happens to sit down in the chair. He's going to hang out for a bit. Good morning, Joel.
Good morning. I get my coffee here.
You get your coffee here?
Yeah, every morning. So I was nearby.
So you've been stocking the studios for quite some time at this point, and we just didn't know you were on site.
I had the door open this morning. Usually they see me coming, and I hear it lock electronically, but... I dress as a ninja, and I think maybe that threw him a little bit.
Yeah, we didn't even see you come in this morning. And then, Logan, I'm a little intimidated, I got to tell you, because I am not a music guy. At my best growing up in the 1980s, we brought out the tennis rackets, and I played sort of the electric tennis racket guitar, and that's as far as I could go. But you're a music guy.
Well, the tennis racket, I don't want to degrade that. That's an impressive mastery of an instrument, first off.
We just killed it. It took me about 13 seconds to master it. So, yeah.
Well, music is a beautiful thing. I mean, I can't express how important it is, obviously, to the church and to the faith journey. And it is so great to be involved in it. And even people like you, Peter, who have no talent in it, it's still a great thing to be involved in.
It is. Logan, is there still hope? I'm 47 years old. Is there hope? Could I have a moment of sort of just this musical? It hits me.
I mean, you really got to only be able to count to four. So if you can do that.
It's going to be a trouble. Well, why don't we do this with Joel in studio? I don't want to waste time talking between you and me. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Christian music scene. We'll talk about worship. And Joel, some things that people might not know about you is you are a farmer these days as well. So we'll get into any number of issues when we come back from break. It is 8 minutes past the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. And as you know, we have Joel Hanson in studio with us this morning. And Joel, I'm sure some of our listeners remember you from Pray for Rain background. You're a worship pastor these days. But maybe what we don't know about you is that you actually not too long ago bought a farm, you and Kathy.
Yeah, we not just metaphorically bought the farm.
You really did buy the farm.
Yeah. In August, it'll be 3 years.
Yeah.
It's a picture that my wife and I had right after we got married. And probably like a lot of people, it's sort of, you have the idyllic picture of a little space, maybe some animals. We have that. But it really was something more than just an idyllic picture. It brought us kind of closer to the ground. Hmm. When you start sort of digging in the dirt, for me, that's the picture, is that's where all the treasure is found, because you're going to confront, for us, like moving to the farm is like, oh, we did it. We have no idea what we're doing right now. Now at 50 years old, had to start over, and like everything we're doing out there had to learn, didn't have any skills for it. And that's actually been really fun. Challenging, but really fun to know a second half of life can be something brand new.
Mm-hmm. And what have you found in the second half of life? As you know, obviously we're on our gadgets all day long these days, but you're talking about getting back in touch with the ground, with the earth, with sort of the rhythms of the day. What are some things you've noticed in these 3 years?
Well, you notice the seasons different for sure.
Mm.
And when you look at scripture, seasons are a huge part of the year. Even what is um, what you stop for, what you celebrate, what you remember. And so it is just kind of put us in more of a seasonal life. And that's been great. And that there's a lot of things that grow without your attention. And some of it's really good and some of it's weeds. But there are things called volunteer. Like they're just in the ground, which is a beautiful metaphor too when you think about life and what's embedded in us, this whole thing around tov, good.
Yeah.
And so we get to actually see that happening.
In a physical way. And you have a barn on site that you guys are in the middle of rehabbing as well. It's going to take some time, but you want to share a little bit about your vision for the use of that?
Yeah, well, we've done a few worship nights in there already over the last couple of years, which has been really, really fun. And it's just a place to – we really see it as a place to gather people. I'll steal a line from Sarah Groves from their place over in St. Paul, which is, you know, gathering people for the common good. Mm. But just there's something about getting people together where something becomes possible. And so, yeah, we want to do weddings like lots of people have done. We'd love to use our farm as a way to support the life that we have. But we really want to be able to gather people around music because I think that music does something to us. There's just something about I'm one of those weirdos who thinks that when God was speaking creation, there may have been a melody.
Mm. So. But C.S. Lewis picked up on that in the Chronicles of Narnia and the Magician's Nephew. And we have this beautiful picture of Aslan when he begins to create, he's singing creation into being.
Yeah. And when I saw that, I'm like, okay, so I'm not crazy. If C.S. Lewis also thinks that, then maybe I'm onto something.
Yeah, you're in good company there.
Yeah,
So we were talking obviously before the break about just getting into music. I have no musical ability whatsoever, no shot in the future. But for you, I'm curious, when did you sort of know growing up that this is something that was sort of in you and you wanted to develop? What did that look like?
That's a great question, and my answer is I never didn't know. My dad handed me an electric guitar when I was 5. And I started playing it later that day and could actually, like, I played my first song day one. And I come from a real musical family, so some of that is maybe just genetic or environmental. But I always had that and just have spent years developing that. So I'm very grateful that those seeds were there and that my dad saw that and wanted to draw that out. And I just kept going.
And from that moment, when did that sort of occur to you, gosh, I would love to maybe do a band. I would love to go public with some of this, with Pray for Rain. What was the process on that?
Well, that's a way less egotistical version than I actually had.
But back then.
When I was in high school, I thought, you know, by the time I graduate, I'm probably going to be famous.
Well, and you were crushing the mullet back then. So it was clear you had the look, you had the sound, you had everything
power mullet.
Yeah, it was a really. Power mullet. Yeah.
I didn't grow up in the church, so I wasn't aware of, you know, music of faith other than hymns that my grandmother would sing at Christmas. When faith intersected my life in high school, that started to shift the maybe what I want to say, because I started writing in high school as well. And the first few songs were, you know, awful. And that's just part of the process, right?
Of course.
You have to write a lot of awful songs to learn how to write. And it's something I wanted to do my whole life and feel super fortunate that I got to, because there's 1,000 people standing behind me who would love to do the same thing. And so just grateful that I've had the opportunity.
And how did you, in that time, as you were kind of, as a young person, pretty heady stuff, you were actually becoming famous. And how, what was it like to have the tension of you're becoming famous and your music is getting well known? And yet this is the Christian kingdom we're talking about here. And so how did you experience some tension between developing this vocation and a sense of who people knew who you are with? But this is about the kingdom of God at the end of the day. How did you navigate some of that at an early age?
Probably not super well, because I was just unaware of a lot of things. It's weird to walk into a place and people know you when you walk in and you don't know them. So you had to kind of get used to that and then just realize, well, the music is getting there before we do. That's what they know. They don't actually know us, but they know the music. Let's try and do a great job of building some relationship real quick with people. And that helped a ton. So sort of the grassroots version of developing a group of people who like what you do, like the sound, like what you say, they spread the word. That's really how it took off for us. And then Christian radio, including KTIS, got behind us right away. We're really, again, grateful. Like, so many things happened that three green boys from Minnesota never, you know, like, how did this all come together?
Yeah, amazing. We got a minute left before break. Young people wanting to get into the music world like this, any suggestions, recommendations real quick you'd have for them?
I would just say, if you're passionate about it, what are you willing to give up to spend time on this? That's going to be one. YouTube, people get famous off that. Care about it. Hone your skills. And if you want to write music about your faith, do it. Do it with integrity. And let your music land wherever it can land. I would say that too. But just, hone your skills. Go for it.
Talking with Joel Hansen this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. We'll take a short break. And Joel, when we come back, you've released a new album not too long ago, sort of a soft release, but I'd love to get into kind of what was behind that and some of the music and where we're headed from here. So we'll take a short break and come back with more with Joel Hansen. That is perfect. That is a good intro, Joel, to the farm. I mean, we're speaking with Joel Hansen on Faith Radio Mornings, and as you've been at this farm for 3 years, have you had any visions out of the cornfield of Shoeless Joe and the Black Sox coming out and encouraging you to build some kind of athletic complex?
No, we're hoping, though.
You are. Yeah. You are. Do you kind of just stand there at twilight each day and just hope for the visions of the past to come present?
It's like you know my life.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I do.
That's great. See, we were talking about getting into music before the break, and you got a text from your daughter, actually, around something that we forgot about what's required to actually get good at something.
Well, she's heard me say this a lot. To be great at something, it's sort of that 10,000 hours of practice mentality. And that's why I was saying, what are you willing to give up?
Yeah.
Because it'll take that.
And that's Malcolm Gladwell talks about that and Tipping Point, just what it was required. Or it was Blink, I believe, in his book, talking about what was needed to really get good at something. So you were actually named Inside Out, however, before Pray for Rain. When we get back into that conversation.
Yeah, not but me you, personally. I'm you, still Joel. But,
you were. Okay, yeah. Right. But for Inside Out, what went into the name and the name shift?
The name, I don't even remember how we came up. Well, it was better than the Joel Hansen Band. So
sure.
It trumped that. That was part of it. And then we made the shift to Pray for Rain when we started doing like a trademark search, and there were 1,000 bands out there with that name. So then we went to Pray for Rain, like, no one's going to have that name. Well, it turns out that somebody did, and they were a group out in California that did TV and movie soundtrack stuff, and they didn't have the name trademarked. And we had trademarked that name, but they'd been using it for over 8 years, so they had common law right to it. So we got nominated for a Grammy for our first record, and we got a letter within a few days of that from an attorney saying, hey, congratulations, you guys. By the way, you're using a name that you don't have the right to. And so we worked it out with them that they didn't want us to pull stuff from the shelves or anything. They said, when you do your next run, just don't put that name on it. So instead of renaming the band, we just went to the initials.
That makes sense. So, but and obviously, there's been a lot of life lived since Pray for Rain days, and this is you've walked quite a journey out. And recently, actually, and what I've appreciated about your music is that your music gets developed out of what's going on in your life. It's really representative of that. And so, you did come out not too long ago with a new album, which is titled
"Let Me Tell You Everything."
Let Me Tell You Everything. Can you just give us a sense of what went into this album? What's kind of the themes? What's in there?
What had been about 9 years since the last record. That's what I do. One a decade.
Yeah. You're pumping them out, Joel.
Because of the farming.
Yeah.
And so that record really spans about a decade of just life. And so kind of coming clean in some places that were in the dark in my life as a part of that. So Let Me Tell You Everything primarily was a song to my wife, just saying these places that I hide aren't helping me. They're not helping us. They're kind of killing me. So here's the keys. Come in. And that was, I remember I wrote that, song, and sang it at church, just with my acoustic guitar, but it landed even then. So then getting to bring it into the album and actually pull a band in was really fun with that. So there's lots of themes. The last two records have really been about sort of the unravel and then digging in the dirt, finding the good that's actually there. Redemption again and again. God's generosity in continuing to draw me out, continuing to say, hey, this doesn't have to be the end. I'm a slow learner. And the records probably reflect that. But there's a lot of gratitude in the record, too.
And I think you said it well. I think for many of us, as we head into our 40s and our 50s, that it's funny how life hardly ever works out like we planned when, you know, we were 20s and 30s. And so you have to face down some different things.
Yep.
And this album is representative of that. And you and Kathy now on this journey towards the future together, it sounds like maybe even some of this process for you in the last 10 years has set the stage for something new at the age of 50 now. It's so inspiring to think we're going to start something we never even thought of before.
Right. And to get to do that together. So much of when it came to career occupation was just me, right? And even when we toured, Kathy rarely came with us. So to be in this new adventure where it takes both of us and we're both passionate about it and it's calling things out of both of us is really, really sweet.
Yeah, God just has this way, right, of taking us through hard places and coming out the other side of that. And we're still so usable for the kingdom. I think people feel so defeated and discouraged these days, and things just happen. And so it's a story of possibility. It's a story of hope moving forward. And I know you'll never promote your album. I know that's not the guy that you are. But can you give our listeners a sense of where they want to, if they could pick it up, where they can go online for this?
Yep. Well, you can always find me in my van off of Snelling, or you can go to iTunes.
Yeah.
And pick it up there. I believe you can go to, well, if you just Google my name and that record, all the different outlets will show up.
And it's Let Me Tell You Everything is the name of the record. So, Joel, another side of your life is that of being worship pastor. You've been worship pastor at Church of the Open Door for how long?
A total of 12 years.
12 years. And you have, at times, the opportunity to meet with young people who, again, want to get into the worship scene. What if you could just have one word for young people to say, hey, you're getting involved with worship, you're going to lead worship, what would be the most important dimension of that in your mind?
Sure. Young people or any people, I would say, understanding what it's for is really going to matter. It's not a career builder. So you got to let that go. If you don't love the people, it's going to be really hard to lead them in anything. So you have to invest in this thing in ways that you probably didn't think you were going to, because you're spending time being good at the craft of music, because that's a particular element that every church uses. But worship is more than that. So you're going to have to understand what is the more. You're going to, the best worship leaders I know become teachers to other people who are carrying that with them and become mirrors for them of things that they see in those people might not know. And that's actually the funnest part of the job. I've spent the last almost 3 years growing a whole crew of people where they don't really need me anymore. And that is what I wanted to do. And it's beautiful to see that happening and to have people see things in themselves that they had no idea they had and could carry, could give away, and that it would be bringing good.
Yeah. And I love that piece of it, that just with a mind towards the future, always. I think we get so consumed by our present circumstances that we're always about building God's kingdom relative to the future. And so can you just circle back one more time into that idea of loving the people as a worship pastor? I went through seminary. I don't remember any classes where that was really the emphasis of what we might be doing in church. And that can be troubling at times, but say more about what's required just for you to enter into that kind of process.
Well, you have to not make your job about you.
Well, that's a good starting point, right?
I came in as like what I did was about me. People hired us to come be us with them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it took me years to kind of see, wait, that doesn't work here. You can't go in like it's going to be one night you play a show and go. These people want to know you and they want to share their life with you. And some of their life is hard. And they want people to carry that with them. We all do, right?
Of course.
Because they are me.
Yeah.
And when that started to arise, my brother-in-law, Steve Weems, is one of the people who just, I remember him saying that to me. I remember watching him walk it out of really wanting to love the people. You have to take time and get to know them. But it changes everything. So, because all of a sudden when you're singing a song in the room and you think about the words you're saying and like, oh, I bet this is landing maybe hard for so-and-so. And sometimes it gives you the opportunity to even speak into that.
Yeah.
Where you're actually leading people, not just in the song, but in the thought about how do we say these things out loud that might be confronting the very place we are, or might just poke at some pain that we have because we've experienced maybe some disappointment and we don't, it's hard to connect to joy right now. When you can be aware of that and who's in the room and what's in the room, you can be really helpful.
Joel, time goes way too quickly. I love that idea, though, just around that worship is this connected group of people in community worshiping God together. And I would love to have you back in studio and just keep exploring these subjects. Think about the Christian music scene as a whole. Thanks for taking some time away from the chickens this morning, right?
Uh-huh.
And the goats.
Yep.
and coming down and being with us here in studio. It's 27 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a break for Breakpoint and news and come back and wrap up the show with our last guest coming out of European Immigration Conversation. Thirty-two minutes past the hour. We'll take a break for news in just a moment. But Joel is still sort of hanging socially awkwardly in the studio. We don't really know what to do with you, Joel.
Neither do I.
Well, you just hang about. And again, if you want to hear some of Joel's new music, just Google Let Me Tell You Everything. It's a great album. We'll go to news. And when we come back for the last half of our hour, we'll talk about the European immigration crisis. Psychologist and author Dr. David Walsh has been talking us through some different parts of getting into the mind of the teenager, and he focuses now on growth spurts in the brain.
When I'm 6 or 7 or 8 years old and I'm trying to learn how to read, learning how to read is associating blots of ink on a page with sounds. If I come into that process with a rich network for phonemic awareness, then the process of learning how to read is going to be easier for me than if I don't. So, you know, one of the important things is to take this brain science that we're talking about and, of course, translate it into, okay, so what do we do? So in this example, the recipe for success is to talk, 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 talk. Read, 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 read. And we need to make sure that parents of newborn babies understand that the conversations they're having, even before the baby can respond, are very important to kind of wire those circuits that are going to be important for their success. Now, when you translate that into the adolescent brain, the growth spurts that are going on in the adolescent brain have to do with impulse control, risk assessment, those things. So once again, the experiences that we have a tremendous impact for later on in life.
That is Dr. David Walsh talking about the mind of the teenager. If you want to hear that entire segment, go to myfaithradio.com. You can search Dr. David Walsh or teenager and catch his entire talk. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Timo Cascatallo of the European Evangelical Alliance, and we'll talk about the immigration situation in Europe as well. So stay with us.
When traveling to a foreign country, you may employ a translator, someone to help you understand what's going on around you. Well, for some of us, it seems like our kids are speaking a foreign language right at home. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I've met a lot of parents who give well-meaning advice to their children, but it's interpreted much differently than it was intended. The kid barks some kind of defensive comment, and parents are left wondering, what did I say wrong? At this point, it's helpful to put yourself in your teen's shoes. To translate your comments, you might be surprised that your well-intentioned comments actually came across as judgmental. Next time, pause and translate your comments before you speak.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find helpful articles, encouraging newsletters, and even small group curricula available online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
It is 20 minutes before the top of the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings, and I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. And we are joined with our final guest of the morning from the European Evangelical Alliance. It's Timo Cascatallo, who can help us walk through the fact that there is immigration conversations and even crises going on, not just in the United States, but all over the world. So really grateful to have you with us this morning, Timo.
Good morning. Good morning.
So can you, you're located out of Finland and obviously as part of the European Union, and there's been a lot of headlines coming out around the idea that borders are open or more open in some countries of the European Union and not others. Timo, can you tell us a little bit about how the government works over there, where you have the EU, but you also have the sovereignty of individual countries? And so some of these countries are letting in immigrants, some are not. Just kind of walk us through that part of what's happening over there.
In theory, there should be the same rules in all the European Union countries, but in practice, those laws and regulations are applied in different ways by individual governments. And the differences are not so vast, actually, but the talk is different in each country. And in certain countries where they are more vulnerable to the immigration influx, they tend to be more aggressive or more strict on the policies, and that is understandable. Countries which are further west or further north can afford to be more relaxed on these issues, but countries in Eastern Europe, which were the first ground for the immigration influx 3 years ago, like Austria, Hungary, Greece, Italy, Spain, they tend to be more strict, and it is understandable because they got a heavier influx in the beginning, and still are getting more people coming in.
Well, and I think it would be helpful, you know, get a little geography lesson for our American listeners, too, like myself, where you talk about the southern part of the European Union. It sounds like what's happening is ships are crossing the Mediterranean filled with migrants, and maybe they land at the port of Italy. And recently, Italy turned away one of the ships, and they rerouted themselves to Spain, who then maybe let them in. Is this kind of an example of some different policies each country might have, even though they're supposed to be unified?
Yes, but there is agreement basically between the European countries that the number of immigrants would be shared equally between the countries, but not every country is following that agreement. And so the countries are like quarreling, okay, why don't you take share, the agreed share of the immigrants coming to Italy? And so most countries, actually, in European Union have not taken what was agreed. And so the burden is laid on the southern countries and southeastern countries in Europe. And they don't like it.
Yeah, and it sounds like there is quite a bit of tension country to country. And part of what was happening with the Brexit or England wanting to remove themselves from the European Union, a lot of this had to do with differences in immigration policy. Is that right?
That's correct. Immigration was the major reason for Brexit for UK. Although UK seems to be quite safe, they are the last country in Europe for this immigration influx, and they are separated by sea as well. But for many, many immigrants, Britain was the actual aim where they wanted to go. And so there were thousands upon thousands of people on the ports of France in Calais, hoping to get into UK, and people in Britain felt this as a threat, and that became the political issue. Unfortunately, the immigration issue is shaping politics in Europe, almost in every country now, in every European Union country. That has become the major issue. Political parties are rewriting their programs, and they have to please people who feel threatened by immigrants and or the influx of immigrants or changing of their culture and society. 3 years ago, the president of Finland gave a kind of annual speech, and he was saying that at facing this immigration influx, the biggest prize or the biggest danger is that we are losing our humane values. By the sheer numbers of immigrants, we would like to keep what is really Christian values, but they are really tested by these huge numbers of immigrants, and the biggest price paid is that we lose those values.
But I think that that sounds like it's so much of the tension, because where primarily from where are the immigrants coming? Are they fleeing war-torn countries? Are they coming to just try to experience a better way of life? What is the shape of the immigration conversation in terms of who is coming into the European Union?
Most of those who came 3 years ago came from Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And they were really running away from violence and war. So if there was a justified reason for these people coming to Europe, although not every individual was at risk, but majority of people were really running away from war in their own country. There are people who are coming to Italy and Spain, coming from countries like Nigeria, where they might not be escaping war, but they're looking for a better life. And that's nothing new either. I mean, most of the population in the USA came there to look for a better life. They were not running away from war. So it is also justified reason. And basically all the Finnish people, for instance, in USA, they came for a better life. And that's what we have done over centuries.
We're speaking with Timo Keskitalo of the European Evangelical Alliance. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll transition from the political landscape into what Timo's organization is doing to help these immigrants. Short break, and we'll be right back. It is 11 minutes before the top of the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we're joined on the line by Timo Keskitalo of the European Evangelical Alliance. And Timo, we spent a lot of time in the first segment just getting a sense of the political landscape. But where it'd be exciting to go is in all the differences and tensions among the country, the church really has an opportunity to minister regardless of what's happening country by country. So tell us a little bit about what you do and how you're helping minister in this immigration crisis.
There was recently a Pew research which found out that those people who are attending the church have a more positive attitude towards the immigrants, which was really interesting, because the nominal Christians tend to be more negative, but those who are actually active Christians had a more positive view than the population in average. And I think this is showing something that the born-again Christians are realizing, that we are living in a revival here. There are so many Muslims turning to Christ in Europe that we're still trying to understand, or is this real? Is this really happening? And there are new churches being started in the mother tongue of people. Farsi churches, Dari churches, Arabic churches are being started. And the church growth in Europe has been mainly with Muslim background believers in past 2 or 3 years.
It's fascinating. And you've seen stories of migrants coming to faith in Jesus. I mean, I get it that there's a tension economically. How do we sort this out? But really what we're talking about from an eternal perspective is opportunity within God's kingdom here. So yeah, give us some other stories just around migrants coming to faith in Jesus in this time.
Well, there is some study about Muslims becoming Christian, and the researchers are saying that in the past 1,400 years of Islam, there used to be one or two people movements to Christ per century. But since the year 2000, there are over 70 of these kind of people movements, where more than 1,000 people from one ethnic group turned to Jesus Christ. So in this past 17 years, over 70 these kind of revivals, and now we are sharing that in Europe. We are seeing so many coming to Christ. The secular officials and authorities, they can't believe this is real. So when they are case after case, they are hearing the immigrants or asylum seekers saying that I have become a Christian. I am from Afghanistan, I am from Iraq, but I have become a Christian. They don't believe it. They say that it's not possible that so many would be telling the same story. They are copying from each other. But they don't know that this is actual fact, global fact, that Muslims are coming to Christ not only in Europe, but in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Turkey. In Turkey, there are many, many new churches being started, Iranian churches, Afghani churches, Syrian churches started in Turkey. And so the same is happening here. And we are still seeing, after 3 years, we are still seeing many people baptized every month. We have baptism services, and friends of friends have turned to Christ.
Wow. Speaking with Timo Cascatallo of the European Evangelical Alliance, we just have a couple of minutes left, Timo, but do you then see, after people are coming to Christ, this, you know, the Finnish way of life, the Spanish way of life, the French way of life, beginning to integrate just so much more easily with maybe the Middle Eastern way of life under a common king, that being Jesus and his kingdom? Are you seeing people come together because of that?
There are many of these new believers. They become members of the local churches in European churches. But what I'm really hoping is that something of their enthusiasm and courage would be part of our culture as well. We need to learn from them, because many of these, mainly brothers, they say that if they send me back and they kill me because of that in Afghanistan, let them kill me because I will die for Christ. And this kind of courage we need in the present climate in Europe, when we are under pressure of secularization, we need that kind of spirit here.
That's great stuff, Timo. Thank you so much for joining us. I'd love to have you back on again to get just a sense of what's happening globally with Christianity. There's just so much of what Jesus is up to in the world around us. We really appreciate your time this morning. Logan, take a short break and come back and wrap up the show.
Roll out those lazy, lazy, crazy days of summer. Just stop the sun and moon and sing a song of cheer.
It is 4 minutes before the top of the hour, and it is the first day of summer from what I understand, Paul, Logan, and Joel. But I apparently might not know actually what this means to have it be the first day of summer.
You don't.
So tell me more. Clue me
in. Simple as that.
I mean, thank you for the judge and jury moment, Paul. Any other further tips you can help somebody like me that doesn't get this stuff?
Well, it's summer. What else do you need to know? I mean, actually, I got to go back. You know, we played the song last hour from the Jamies, the 1958 classic. You know, what is it? You got the summertime?
Yeah, Joel could sing it for us real quick if we wanted him to.
But I'm not gonna.
Okay.
Well, anyway, actually, I was listening to that song and I was going, wait a minute. Peter, you've been holding out on us. We joked yesterday about time machines, and you have one because you sound just like Tommy Jameson from the band. You could sing that song for us if you wanted to.
Oh, Paul, that is so helpful and encouraging, because I've always thought I have a voice that's made for a vow of silence, and I really appreciate that. Logan, you actually had a definition for summer that might be helpful for our listeners, too.
Well, for so many people, it doesn't matter what the stars or the sun says. It matters when your kid gets out of school. That's when summer starts.
There you go. That is the official start of summer, right? And that's when the roads begin to decongest. We can drive in peace, other than the construction season starts,
I'm sorry,
right?
Decongest? Do you know where we are?
You know, I have a PhD. I can make up words just as we go. And Joel, I mean, what are you finding at the start of summer here out on the farm?
Having to mow a lot. And everything's growing. Everything's growing like crazy.
So you have how many? You have about 5 acres?
We have 5 acres, and we live on 2.5 of that. 2.5 is tilled and farmed by a neighbor, and they're growing corn right now. So by mid-August, it's a giant privacy fence. You can't even see our house from the road until you get close.
Oh, that's fun. So do you use like a walk behind mower? Are you riding on something? What are you doing?
I've got 2 horses and a blade we drag behind.
It's like the old Amish deal.
It is. Yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Little house beard. On the prairie.
It is. It just does conjure up images. I assume, you know, as the sun goes down, you break out the guitar or some kind of instrument.
Fiddle.
It's the fiddle.
My kids have started calling me Pa.
Yeah, you know, I want to sit on your front porch, Joel. I want to drink in the beauty of the music and the farm and all that's there. I mean, Logan, it just, you know, you're 22. You've never even seen a farm probably at this point. But
yeah.
but help us out. I mean, what draws you to the images of the farm, Logan?
Oh, my gosh. Well, my grandfather lives on a farm. Thank you very much.
Oh, so you do have some background.
I've picked rock in a field, and I can tell you it is the most miserable thing in the world. they're beautiful. They're a great rustic thing to be a part of, and life is just so much simpler.
Well, Logan, one last thing as we go to break then. I've missed you practicing your Dr. Peter Kapsner. Can you just give me one shot at that?
Well, I've had a great morning with you, Dr. Peter Kapsner.
Thank you so much. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. The tomb is empty, and we'll catch you tomorrow on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.